Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, practicing veterinarian, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, it's all about the kitty cats. Finally, it's just in this profession, dogs get so much more love than cats do. Not necessarily affection, but they get the short end of the stick when it comes to regular engagement in their health care, attention to their health care. Sometimes I have a whole day where I don't see one single cat. And so my show, unfortunately, is biased towards dogs, as I'm sure you've noticed, not because I have a bias or preference necessarily to one species over the other. I find them both amazing in just completely different ways. It's that the dogs are more relevant because that's way more of what I see. And so I want to fix that. I want to get awareness out there. I also want to highlight some of the reasons why cats don't get regular well care. Sometimes I don't see them until they're 11 years old and they come in sick and they've never seen a vet in their entire life. It's amazing. The last vet they might have seen was, you know, the shelter vet that spayed or neutered them at the shelter. And then never again. So we want to remedy this. And so we're going to jump into that in just a moment. First, we have a wonderful email from a repeat offender. Marlis, the licensed veterinary technician from the great state of New York, where I started my career. I was on the North Shore of Long Island in Huntington. Spent 3 years there, and I decided I wanted warmer weather, but mad love for New York and all the LBTs that work so hard, like I'm sure Marlis does. So here is her email, and then we'll jump into our topic. Hello again from wonderful New York. I had to let you know, I love the recent podcast about how so awfully non-compliant many owners are. Man, that hit home. I work for a cat-only spay-neuter clinic, and we spell out discharge instructions very clearly and make clients sign a copy when they leave. Still, so many owners return with their cats with heavily licked incisions, seromas from overactivity, and e-collars that are 2 weeks old and pristine. So we know they have not been on 24/7 as claimed. I'm so annoyed at the current view of vet medicine and how vets are only in it for the money and to keep pets sick so they have business. And yet it seems we just have to sit back and let the clients do that for us. I never saw Jerry Maguire, but if I had $1 for every time I told a client, help me to help you, I'd be rich. It's so sad when they don't follow instructions or ask for more help. They always blame the vet and vet staff for their ongoing misery. And along with that, I'd love it if someday you do a little intro on the idea that vets are getting kickbacks from all these diets and meds they prescribe. I mean, I love all my kickbacks. The chip clips from Frontline. This is really funny. The inflatable fleet and tick from Advantix. The Hills bandana for my doggo. And the pens. I love a good pen. Especially if it has a parasite that moves when you tip the pen. So I'm sure if us techs are getting all this great stuff, you must be getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in real kickbacks. I hear about these daily payments in many dog groups. So maybe someday you could tell us what your greatest ones were. Thanks for the great content. Marlis, I don't do last names. You did list it though, LVT. That was an awesome email. Oh my God, you nailed it. I think for you LVTs, it's probably even more frustrating with the non-compliance because when things go south and the owners don't take accountability, they're actually, you know, you have more hands on the patients than we do. You have more client interaction than we do. And when they're frustrated, you often bear the brunt of their frustration. I hate when my clients that are perturbed, sometimes for reasons that are not even remotely our fault, take it out on my technicians, and then take a completely different tone with me. I'm sure you've observed this. you know, I'd rather they take it out on me. You know, don't abuse my techs. Folks, I'm just going to comment real quick before I have more commentary on Marlis's email. I can't even tell you how extraordinary veterinary technicians are. They have a very, very hard job. They are in the trenches. They have, like I said, more hands on the patient, more client interaction, because we're jumping from case to case. We're doing the surgery, we're prescribing the medicine, but guess who's implementing all the treatments? With sometimes not so cooperative patients, patients that bite and scratch. And I love the meme that says if Chuck Norris had a day job, he'd be a vet tech, and it's so true. And so you're at a cat-only spay-neuter clinic, so yes, I'm sure you see the non-compliance like crazy. And now, you know, thank you for being a fellow veterinary professional, sharing my frustration. I swear we can like form a support group. Maybe they're out there at some of the frustrations that we have. And yes, my last episode was the human species presents the greatest barrier to compliance. It is the pet owner that gives us the hardest time. As far as the kickbacks are concerned, I've gotten the same kickbacks as you. You know, the little we call it swag, you know, the occasional bandana, lots of pens. I got more pens than I know what to do with. I will say this, we do get the occasional lunch and learn where a pharmaceutical rep comes in to introduce a new product and educate us about it. And they'll buy us a modest lunch. It's stuff that, you know, it's not, we have a budget usually, you know, we're usually looking at something like tropical smoothie or pizza, you know, nothing crazy extravagant. But that's about as good as it gets, lunch and learns. But no kickbacks. And in fact, diets are really frustrating because the markup on diets are so dismally low. It's almost not even worth the retail of selling them. But we sell them because they work for the diseases we are prescribing the diets for. I take no pleasure in selling food, and I most certainly get no kickback. So thank you for your email. I really appreciate it. Keep them coming, please. So pithy. Just absolutely love it. So let's talk about our kitty cat. So according to Pew Research, the most updated data that we have as far as pet ownership is 45% of households have at least one dog, and 29% of households have at least one cat. And so, you know, there's a 16% difference there. There's more cat dogs out there than cats. And it would make sense that the number of dogs that we see are going to slightly eclipse to some degree, at least 16 to 20%, the number of dogs that we see. Yet, when it comes to vet visits, only 81%, this is from a study done by the Huffington Post in a recently published article, 81.8% of vet visits are, 81.8% of dogs regularly see a veterinarian, whereas 39.8% of cats regularly see a veterinarian. So that means that a whopping 61% of cats don't regularly see a veterinarian. That's astounding to me, whereas 18% of dogs, it's still bad, don't regularly see a veterinarian, but that's a huge disparity. When we look at that, it's just remarkable to me. And as I said, I wasn't kidding when I tell you that there will be entire days where I don't see one single cat. And then when I do see the cat, it's a sick visit. Cat's not up to date on any of its immunizations. And you know, we really want to fix that. And it's been a very common theme in the profession since I graduated in 2002, and it really hasn't changed much. And so what's the reason for that? Well, one of the things that people erroneously assume is that their cats are perfectly fine because they live in this sheltered environment. They kind of take care of themselves. They're a bit more aloof and independent. And because of those traits, they assume that They can just take care of themselves. They're fine. They don't need a regular examination. Nothing could go wrong with my cat because it's inside all the time. Or here in Florida, they go out on these birdcage-like structures that we have in the back that are screened in, porches. We call them lanais. That's a great life for a cat. They get to be outdoors, see the birds, but they're screened in, so they're safe. So, and you know, still a very sheltered environment, a sheltered lifestyle, and by virtue of that, people think, well, nothing can go wrong with my cat. The other thing that people don't realize, cat owners don't realize, is that cats are so incredibly stoic. They just internalize all feelings of illness and pain until they can no longer hide it anymore. They're so tremendously tough, we can't even wrap our heads around it. I had a cat come in this week. It was actually Thursday, and cat had never seen a vet. It was 13 years old, and same household. The dogs come in every year without fail. And if there's so much as a blemish on a dog, one of the dogs in this household, I'm going to see those dogs, two Labrador Retrievers. Didn't even know they had a cat. No idea. Known these people for a while. And yet, this cat has never seen me once, never seen a vet once, ever since it got adopted from the shelter. The lady in this relationship clearly loved the cat. That's her baby. And came in with this very, 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 very sick animal. And she was very noticeably upset. So she did not bring the cat in to me because she did not love the cat. She didn't bring the cat into me because the cat is kind of a one-person cat, a bit on the fractious side with everybody but her. And it's probably why the husband commonly brought the dogs in, didn't even mention the cat, because I don't think the cat liked him very much. But clearly there was a relationship with this lady, and some cats are like that, some dogs are like that. They just, you know, pick a person and everybody else, nope, you're not coming near me. But I wish she would have communicated that to us, or maybe the husband in all the years I saw the dogs communicated that this is a barrier to bringing the kitty in. A, it's an indoor cat, and she always was self-sufficient and seemed fine. But also, this cat was rather fractious. So I wish they would have communicated that to me, because we have protocols that can really help kitty cats that don't love to go to the vet, and it's really stressful for them, and they make it so that it's very challenging for the veterinary staff to help them. We have this wonderful protocol called the gabapentin protocol. We give them 100 milligrams of gabapentin the night before the visit, and then in the morning, 90 minutes to 2 hours before the visit, we give them a second dose. It chills these kitties out so well. They come in, they're docile. There was one that came in, actually a calico. I don't know, for all you cat lovers out there, you know calicos can be feisty and spicy. They're kind of like the redheads of the feline world. They're, I think, 99.7% of them are females, so I don't think I've ever met a male calico. They can be spicy, and in came this calico the other day. It was actually this week as well. This was Wednesday, and the young lady who brought the kitty in was like, I'm going to apologize ahead of time. She can be feisty, but I did give her gabapentin, because the previous veterinarian that was regularly seeing this cat, they still had gabapentin in stock from previous visits with that vet. And so the cat was definitely nervous, but we were able to give a good thorough examination. We were able to trim the nails. We were able to do everything we needed to do, draw blood. And the kitty did fine because gabapentin was on board. And she didn't even follow the full protocol and give it the night before, morning of. Not because she was not following instructions. That particular veterinarian didn't follow the full protocol. So the cat could have even been calmer. And so we could have overcome that barrier, and we could have come across this kitty cat, gave it regular examinations and well care in a minimally stressful way, and probably had a much better outcome than what happened to this cat. So in comes this cat, and I could tell the cat was clearly feisty in its heyday, because this cat could barely open its eyes, was in a severe state of hypovolemic shock. That's basically such severe dehydration that leads to shock. Body condition was really poor, had a very foul smell coming from the mouth, not just because it had rotten teeth, that's one thing I'm going to touch on again in a moment, but also like just the breath had a sick smell to it. And yet this cat was so sick and was still growling at me as I'm giving an exam. Can't even stand up, but it's still growling at me. Actually hissed even when we took the temperature. So ultimately I told the owners, I'm like, we could run some blood work. I think whatever's going on here is going to be pretty bad, so I definitely brace yourself for the likelihood that this is going to be something that may not be treatable, but we can take a quick look, and I could have blood work in 20 minutes. It doesn't hurt to at least see if there's something we can use. So they agreed to it. Folks, this cat was in such a severe state of kidney failure, it's not even compatible with life. I don't know how this cat even had a heartbeat, let alone was still able to growl at me. That's how tough cats are. So put it in perspective. One of the kidney values that is a toxin, it is a product of protein metabolism waste. So it's a waste product of protein metabolism. Basically, cat eats protein. Protein isn't all absorbed and necessarily utilized. There's a waste product associated with it. Body utilizes the protein, integrates it into metabolic processes and tissue building, tissue restoration, and then there's a waste product. The waste product literally is ammonia. Ammonia that, yeah, you can buy and clean your floors with. That stuff, we know how potent and toxic that stuff is. It's a great cleaner, certainly a good antibacterial stringent to disinfect surfaces, but certainly not something you want inside your body. So luckily, the kitty cat has a liver that converts the ammonia into a less toxic product called urea. Still a toxin though, but it's not as potently toxic as ammonia. And then that urea travels to the kidneys, gets urinated out, and that's why urine is called urine, because it's primarily urea. So when the patient's in kidney failure, that's one of the substrates that accumulates in the body. We call it blood, urea, nitrogen, or BUN. So when the kidneys are in failure, they can't eliminate the waste products quickly enough, and so they accumulate. Well, a normal BUN for a cat should not exceed 32. This cat's BUN was 140. And so any of you out there that have accidentally had too much to drink one night and you feel intoxicated the next day, you literally are intoxicated, and by virtue of that, it makes you feel sick, maybe for a day or two. Well, think, and we call that a hangover, okay? Think of the worst hangover you ever had and multiply it by 1,000. That's how this cat must have felt with a BUN of 140. I am very concerned when I see a BUN of mid-40s. Okay, I'm starting to have major concerns. So this poor cat presented with a BUN of 140. It also had rotten teeth. So the teeth were just completely decayed. Cats get dental disease, and that's something that we check for on the regular vet well visits, because we know that cats that live with chronic periodontal disease, not only do they get the stress of pain and infection in the mouth, there is a distinct connection to the onset of kidney failure 40% earlier in life. It's the number one cause of death in cats. We're going to accelerate that possibility and probability by 40% if we're not regularly looking after the cat's teeth. Same applies to dogs, by the way. However, dogs are not quite as prone to kidney failure as cats. We do still see it, and when the teeth are bad chronically and they're not addressed, it can damage the kidneys. So let's rewind. I recommended euthanasia. I said there is no miracle that's going to reverse this. I could probably, you know, plug in aggressive amounts of fluids intravenously for a few days. I don't think that this BUN is going to move much. And if it did move much, to the extent that your cat was lucid again and able to eat or willing to eat, you'd probably be back in a few days because it would spike again. If this were my cat, I would not be looking at trying to prolong this. The most humane way to go is to euthanize. They agreed, and it was sad. It was very sad. But let's rewind here, and let's recognize that had this cat come in for regular well visits, well, I would have caught the dental disease, or another vet would have. We could have addressed the dental disease as it came. Usually somewhere around 4 or 5 years old, we start to see dental disease in cats. This cat had a honking heart murmur. I don't know how much that contributed to the presentation, but that's something we would have caught as well in routine well visits. There are so many things we catch in routine well visits. By the time the cat is 8 years old, they, even though they look nimble, even though they look like they did when they were four in many cases, they're senior aged animals. And that's when things start to really go wrong. So that's when we like to start to do regular yearly blood work. So had we been doing that, maybe we would have caught the early markers for the development of kidney disease, and we could have put this cat on a prescription renal support diet. That is something that could have not only maintained the quality of this kitty cat, but added years to her life. So, you know, I look back and I wonder how many years did this poor kitty live with painful teeth? And no one knows it because cats aren't going to show signs of pain. They just suffer silently. How much good could we have done this cat if it had to come in regularly? We could have done it in a very minimally invasive way with gabapentin protocol, easily administered by the owner. We just dispense capsules. You can dissolve it in liquid. You can put it in their food. You can syringe it to them. It's so simple to do. And it works so well. So that's one of the barriers to compliance, is that you got good people. They love their animal, but they're like, they're indoors. And what's the point? Well, that case right now that I just went through with you, that's the point. The other notion is that, well, cats aren't prone to disease. You know, how's my cat going to get rabies when it doesn't go outside? How's my cat going to get feline leukemia when it doesn't go outside? How's my cat going to get an intestinal parasite when it doesn't go outside? How's my cat going to get feline distemper when it doesn't go outside? These are all the things we're preventing for with cats. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that with cats that don't maybe have access to a screened-in porch. But the ones that do and go out, so I'm talking, you know, even up north, there's people with screen-in porches that they'll, you know, let their cats out. But certainly here, just about everybody's got a screen-in porch. And most people are going to let their cats out on the screen-in porch. So unless you're an apartment dweller, it's highly unlikely that your cat doesn't at least have access to a screen-in porch in most cases. Well, guess what? Your cat could still get disease. So number one, rabies is state law. So you're breaking the law if your cat isn't vaccinated for rabies. I won't see a cat without updating a rabies vaccine, just because that is a human health risk to my staff, to me, and I'm actually breaking the law by not making the recommendation. And so, you know, it's a human health hazard. So God forbid your cat does get sick. Well, guess what? We have to give a sick animal a rabies vaccination because that's our protocol. I'm not going to put my staff at risk, and I'm not going to break the law, and I'm not going to be enabling the breaking of the law, right? Law is law, and it's there for good reason. We see a lot of rabies here in Florida. Rabies is everywhere. Every day we get rabies, not every day, every week we get at least one rabies alert across the email or through our fax. Very often in our own county, not far away from us. It is a real risk, and it's not uncommon for a cat to be out on a lanai and there's a raccoon there, rabies prone animal, and they will fight through the screen. Raccoons can be particularly nasty, especially when there's maybe food around left out for that cat on the porch. They can actually tear through screens. And so your cat is not immune to rabies just because it exists on a screened-in porch. What we also have here in Florida is a big feral cat problem. So there's feral cats all over. And when I say feral cats, I mean cats that are not owned by anyone. They live in the wild and they come looking for food, and they commonly come across our yards, and they can come in contact with our cats through screens. Cats fight. They may not tear through the screen, but they can come in contact with one another's sputum. They can spray. There's a number of ways cats can transfer disease through a screen. We also have bobcats here in Florida that, by the way, eat domestic cats. So if you're one of those people that lets your cat outside of the lanai, just know that they can get eaten by lots of things, including bobcats. But bobcats, just so you know, carry the same diseases and parasites that domestic cats do. So we have them everywhere here in Florida. I see one about a month. Each month I'll see one by the entrance to my development, or, you know, if I'm just kind of, it's early in the morning, it's still dusky out, and I'm jogging through my path that goes through the preserve, I'll see one and it'll scuttle off. They're absolutely beautiful, by the way. But yeah, that's a source of disease. What we also have commonly here in Florida is these little lizards that you cannot keep out of your screened-in porch. These little lizards are commonly hunted by our cats, and they carry this big, ugly, nasty tapeworm called Spirometra. Spirometra starts off as a little tiny egg that then hatches into a larvae that then one day becomes this big, long, ugly parasite that slowly chips away at the health of your cat. Very often it's asymptomatic. And so one of the things we do with well care is we check a stool once a year. People assume my cat can't get parasites from, you know, it's sheltered life. Oh, yes, they can. It's a very rare cat that can resist hunting a little salamander running by, and they carry these things. So there's a number of reasons to get hands on the patient. Cats commonly get a disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. If we catch that early, we can really extend their life by simply putting them on a very benign medication called a beta blocker once a day. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy commonly presents with beginning with a murmur that we would hear on physical examination. We investigate that murmur, possibly with starting with some x-ray, do a simple echocardiogram, and then lo and behold, we put them on a beta blocker. We add years to their life. Would have never known that if I'm not getting my stethoscope on the chest of that patient once a year. So I can give you examples after example after example after example of how important well care is for cats. And yet, again, I'm going to say only 39.8% of cats that live in a household get regular veterinary care. It's astounding. Far less than half. So let's talk about other barriers. Catching the cat. so let's say the folks are committed to getting the cat in, and they want to get the cat in, but cat knows when it's vet day. They just know. You know, you have a certain body language about you, and you're going to catch your kitty, and they run under the bed, or they scuttle off somewhere where you just can't reach them. Well, there's ways around that. and these are some of the cats that, you know, you go to approach them with the gabapentin protocol, and they're like, nope, I know what you're up to. So some little tricks you can use is to consider, you know, just putting maybe some of their favorite treats in a carrier, and then wait till they go in there, kind of close the door, and then off you go to the vet. Maybe schedule an appointment late in the morning so you can, you know, they come looking for breakfast, and you put their breakfast in the carrier, and they go and they start eating their breakfast. You close it, gives you maybe a few hours leeway to let your little trick work. That's one thing you could do. Another thing you could do is consider a house call vet. Have your cat in a room, again, lured in by food or treats, that doesn't have a bed in it per se, that they're gonna run and hide in, and have a house call done. There's plenty of house call vets around there. There's like three alone. I think a fourth one that just launched in my county alone. And so that's another thing you can do. But let's not get fooled by the notion that cats are self-sufficient and don't have the same necessities for regular well care than dogs do. And that's especially true when they're seniors. So please, 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 please get that regular vet care. It's only once a year, folks. Maybe twice a year when they're seniors if there's something chronic going on. And to all you cat owners that make the commitment to bring your cat in, that understand the importance, and I see you guys all the time. You're so dedicated. You even overcome the barriers so diligently, giving insulin injections and, you know, going the extra mile for that feline. It's just, I feel like the love of a feline is potentially even more beautiful than the love of a dog, because dogs, they're emotional, they give it back to you, they're up your butt, they're just, you know, such social animals and constantly craving your attention, and they're easy to love. With cats, you have to understand the majesty and the beauty in them. You have to understand their uniqueness, and you have to really appreciate those times when they do give you affection, that it's so unique and not natural to the feline. In terms of when you look at like felines in general, other felines out there, they tend to be solitary creatures, and yet you got these domestic cats that really thrive in a domestic environment, and they do show affection in their own way. And so when I see these people that just adore their cats, I have such respect for that. I just find it so beautiful. You know, it's especially beautiful. It's especially beautiful when it's a man. When I see a man love his cat every bit as much as other men would love their dog, that's really special to me, because guys tend to be dog people. You know, they're going to be way more inclined to have a dog because, you know, got your big dog and you're going to go throw the frisbee and we're going to go running together, and that's going to be your preference. You know, the majority of men, they just prefer dogs. But when you see a guy absolutely in love with and enthralled with his cats, that's a special thing. And I see a lot of those guys go the extra mile, and I appreciate you and applaud you as well. I'm going to leave you with this. Very famous cat person, very masculine man, unmistakably masculine man. For those of you who are football fans, college football fans, or NFL fans, you might know this name. Right now, he's known as Coach Prime. His nickname in his career was Prime Time. The great Deion Sanders, one of the greatest football players of all time to play the game, is an avid cat person. He absolutely adores his cats. You know what he once famously said? He goes, "Dogs love everybody. I don't want a dog." He said, "You got to work for a cat's love." He goes, that's the animal I want. That animal's got spunk. I gotta work for that love, and I appreciate that." He used to take his cats with him on the plane to his games wherever he went. He never went anywhere without his two cats, his two girls. I read an article about that in Sports Illustrated. I found that fascinating. So that's my show for the day, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Biggest takeaway: please show those cats some love. More than just affection, let's see to their health needs and make sure that their quality of life is good. Marlis, thank you for your email. Really appreciate it. Keep them coming. Have a great day, everyone.